From NPR and Chicago Public Radio, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle.
And I'm Peter Sagal. This week, the long and controversial career of a well-known reporter came to an end. You might have thought you knew everything about her, but on our show, we will reveal an amazing secret from her past. I'll give you a hint. She once accused Susan Stamberg of harboring weapons of mass destruction. Plus, we ask Carl if he'll start dressing like the newsmakers he imitates for that extra touch of realism.
No, 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 no!
We'll ask who really got slapped down and why, plus other firm statements in this week's news coming up in our quiz right after this hour's news.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. The Iraqi leadership says the insurgency may have suffered a crippling blow if, in fact, Izzat Ibrahim al-Duri is dead. Izzat's described as the highest-ranking official of the Saddam Hussein regime still at large. Today, supporters of Saddam's Ba'ath Party claimed on the internet that Izzat had died. That website statement has not been independently verified. UN Secretary General Kofi Annan arrived in Baghdad today, echoing Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice's calls for unity among Iraqis. A day after Rice visited Iraq, Annan said reconciliation among religious and ethnic rivals was vital. His comments came ahead of parliamentary elections next month. Earlier, Annan was in Jordan, where he denounced bomb attacks on Wednesday. Jordan has disputed a claim by al-Qaeda in Iraq that four people, including one woman, carried out the deadly suicide bombings against three hotels in Amman on Wednesday that killed at least 57 people. It also has ruled out that the suicide bombers were Jordanian, but said it would not reveal the nationalities until the investigations were completed. Dale Gavlak has more from Amman.
Deputy Prime Minister Marwan Muasher told reporters that only three non-Jordanian suicide bombers belonging to Abu Musab al-Zarqawi's branch of al-Qaeda carried out the triple hotel blast.
All the bodies have been identified, and none of the bodies indicate that there was a fourth woman, as the al-Qaeda website indicated yesterday.
He added that Jordan has secured its major hotels and malls in Amman and in the Red Sea resort of Aqaba with metal detectors and other devices to protect citizens and tourists from any further attempted attacks. For NPR News, I'm Dale Gavlak in Amman, Jordan.
In France, officials are taking new steps to stop the worst civil unrest the country has seen in decades. NPR's Tom Bullock has this story from Paris.
It's a strange sight on French streets, police smelling the hands of young men, trying to see if they've handled gasoline used to torch cars and burn buildings. The riots that started in the suburbs of Paris and spread to 300 other towns across France continue. And although the overall number of incidents are down, the destruction goes on. So far, between 5,000 and 7,000 cars have been burned, hundreds of buildings and shops set ablaze, and more than 1,300 protesters arrested. French officials say there are signs rioters may now be focusing on Paris. The police here say they've intercepted internet and text messages calling for violent acts in Paris on Saturday night. So now more than 3,000 police are on the streets. All public gatherings have been banned, and the sale of small amounts of gasoline that could be used to make firebombs are outlawed in the French capital. Tom Bullock, NPR News, Paris.
France is in the middle of the Armistice holiday weekend, marking the end of World War I. This is NPR. The global trade in plants and animals may pose a bigger threat to wildlife than regulators had supposed, according to researchers who examined 5 years' worth of U.S. government import records. NPR's John Nielsen has more.
When animals like elephants or trees like mahogany are threatened by excess trading, trading bans are sometimes put into place by a United Nations group called CITES, or the Convention on International Trade in Endangered Species. The problem, according to a new paper in Conservation Biology, is that the trading numbers used by CITES may be artificially low. Researchers from the World Wildlife Fund reached this conclusion after studying American imports of conch shells, caviar, living coral, foreign ginseng, and mahogany. In almost every case for the last 5 years, they found that the CITES estimates were far lower than those recorded by the U.S. Customs Service. That may mean that some species that need protection are not getting it. Spokesman for the CITES Secretariat in Geneva did not respond to requests for comment. John Nielsen, NPR News, Washington.
California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger will promote better trade relations with China in the next week. Tomorrow, he leaves for Beijing. Schwarzenegger is expected to meet with business executives. On Tuesday, he suffered a political blow and voters rejected all four of his Year of Reform ballot proposals. Iran's nuclear chief says he wants his own country to enrich uranium rather than leaving it to Russians to perform that job. The official told reporters in Tehran that Iran's nuclear fuel must be produced inside the country. Britain, France, and Germany had proposed that Iran hand over the enrichment process to Russia. I'm Lakshmi Singh, NPR News, Washington.
Support for NPR comes from the Annie E. Casey Foundation, supporting families and neighborhoods by funding initiatives aimed at helping disadvantaged children. On the web at aecf.org.
From NPR and Chicago Public Radio, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle, and here's your host at the Chase Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thanks, everybody. Thank you. Thank you, everybody. We got a big show for you this week. We got lots of analysis, of post-election analysis, and matinee idol Tab Hunter will be joining us later on to play our Not My Job game, but before we begin, a couple of weeks ago on this program, we read aloud an excerpt from Scooter Libby's out-of-print novel, The Apprentice. And after that, things really took off. The New Yorker printed excerpts, it got mentioned on cable news, copies of it went for more than $2,000 on eBay. And then finally this week, the publisher brought The Apprentice back into print. So, Mr. Libby, if you're listening, you're welcome. No need to send us any portion of your royalties. Consider it our contribution to your defense fund. So let's see what trends we can get started this week. Give us a call. The number is 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, Peter. My name is Ellen Ringel, and I'm from Merrimack, New Hampshire.
Happened Merrimack. How are things up there?
Oh, lovely. Very nice up here.
Getting cold, I would bet.
Very cold.
That's good. It keeps those tourists from Massachusetts away.
Yeah.
And what do you do there?
I am going to nursing school, and I have two young kids and a very supportive husband and a very helpful mother that I live with.
Wow.
Yeah.
You live with your mother?
Well, she lives with us, I should say.
I see.
We need her too much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, let me introduce you to our panel this week. First, say hello to a journalist and a contributor these days to ABC's Nightline, Ms. Sue Ellicott.
Hello, Sue.
Hello. You wouldn't like to send your mother over to me. I could do with some help.
Yeah.
Now, a nice home in London, two charming boys.
Also, a comedian who will be performing New Year's Eve at the Paramount Theater in Aurora, Illinois, Ms. Paula Poundstone.
Oh, hi, Paula.
Hey, how you doing?
Oh, great. It's good to hear your voice. You're very fun.
Well, isn't that sweet of you? So far, you're my favorite caller.
And lastly, say hello to a humorist and the author most recently of Feet on the Street, Rambles Around New Orleans, Mr. Roy Blunt, Jr.
Hello, Roy.
Hello, Ellen. Does your mother do windows?
She does just about anything I ask her to. She's great.
Ellen, welcome to our show. Now, you're going to play Who's Carl This Time? Carl Castle will start us off by reading three quotes from the week's news. If you can correctly identify or explain just two of those quotes, you will win our prize, Carl's Voice, on your home answering machine. Here we go. Here is your first quote. It is Wednesday's headline, a banner headline from the Los Angeles Times.
No, 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 no.
So that summed up what Californians had to say this week. To whom?
Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yes, indeed. Very good.
Was it an echo of what about a dozen women said to him in various elevators?
When Arnold Schwarzenegger was elected governor of California 2 years ago, and that really happened, by the way, we're not making that up. He promised to go over the heads of the legislators who disliked him and appeal directly to the people. Well, as it turns out, the people hate him too. Californians rejected every single one of his pet initiatives, plus a bunch of others, just because they were in the mood. On Thursday, Arnold admitted defeat, and he actually said this: "If I was to make another Terminator movie, I would tell the Terminator to travel back in time to tell Arnold not to have another special election."
So it's not that he's not a bright man.
It's good to have politicians firmly grounded in reality, I think.
No, that's introspection. That's good.
All right, very good, Ellen. Here's your next quote.
Okay.
High school science finals will be so much easier now that the kids can just write down, "God did it."
That was a blogger named Russ Belleville. He was one of the many people praising the state of Kansas for their latest victory in their ongoing battle against what?
Evolution.
Right, exactly right. Once again, the Kansas State Board of Education has become the leading national advocates for and the best argument against intelligent design. Their new science standards require teachers to discuss the evidence that evolution is so much infernal, godless claptrap. And this is the best part. The new science standards actually change the definition of science to include potentially supernatural explanations. This is true. Next up, in Kansas, teaching students that the reason Kansas is so flat, God wanted a place to slide around in his socks.
This is really going to make excuses for students a lot easier, too. It was in my backpack when I left this morning.
All right, very good. Here's your last quote.
"My husband and I were considering several cruise lines, and after we read what your captain did, we're going with you."
Now, that was an email from a woman who decided to book her upcoming trip with Seabourn Cruise Lines after the captain of one of their ships stopped. What?
Oh, the pirates?
Yes, a pirate attack.
Arr. Turn over your buffet. Arr.
I know, you shouldn't laugh. Well, you know those luxury cruises and the big ships, 15 ports, 15 days, 6 full meals a day.
24 and of course, viruses.
And of course, a pirate attack off the Somali coast.
The clash of the swords against the walkers was startling.
So yeah, this huge cruise ship was off the coast of Somalia. These pirates came out in motorboats, started firing guns and grenades and bazookas at this cruise ship. But the captain and the crew fired back with this high-tech sound weapon. You, like sort of a cannon that shoots sound and drives you nuts, and then
it's
out
a karaoke went, machine.
It's something like that. Yeah. No, and so you know, everybody was very happy. The captain and the crew were heroes. In fact, the passengers enjoyed this adventure so much that they petitioned the captain, and he turned the ship around. They went back, and the passengers led an expedition to rout the pirate secret base. It was led by Fran and Phil Berkowitz of Fort Lauderdale and the rest of Table 3. Carl, how did Ellen do in our quiz?
Oh, Ellen had a great game, Peter. She had 3 correct answers. Ellen, you win our prize. Congratulations.
Oh, thank you.
Well done. If people out there are listening to us and saying to themselves, wow, those people are having a great time there at the Chase Auditorium in Chicago's Loop, well, you can join us. Please, whenever you're in Chicago, stop by at one of our regular shows. You can get more information at our website, waitwait.npr.org, or go to chicagopublicradio.org. But right now, panel, it's time for you to answer some questions about the week's news. Paula, a listener named James Callan alerted us to this story from the front lines in Afghanistan. Some American troops there have been using what in their fight against Taliban insurgents?
Silly buddy.
You're so close.
Slinkies.
No, it involves silly.
S- Silly String.
Silly String, yes.
Wow.
Did you just know that? I mean, you immediately focused on
it. It seems so obvious.
Yes. A former Marine who had served in Afghanistan wrote to a website which has articles on Silly String. He wondered where he could place a bulk order for the stuff. This is, of course, is the aerosol, you know, spray stuff. You spray it and spring comes out. The Marine explained that in Afghanistan, fighters used this stuff to detect booby traps, tripwires. Quote, when you spray the string, it just spreads everywhere, and when it sets, it lays right on the wire. Unquote.
We've just used it domestically.
Yeah.
I don't see how that works. It lays on the wire.
Well, here's the thing. You're going into a room, there's like a tripwire, maybe like a very thin thread.
So you just spray the silly string.
The silly string, which is so light and flows everywhere, and it sort of lays over the wire. You're like, aha. Don't step there.
You can also use the crazy eight ball.
Is there a booby trap in there? Ask again later. Roy, listen to this.
It's hot today, isn't it? It's the best weather when you're training for the marathon.
According to psychologists who just completed a study in Britain, that sentence has been deemed what?
That sentence, I've forgotten what the sentence was now.
Let's hear it again.
It's hot today, isn't it? It's the best weather when you're training for the marathon.
Boy, could you give me a little brief hint?
Well, are you feeling an urge to spend time with Carl, to maybe let him buy you a drink?
It's a great pickup line.
It is, in fact, yes, the world's best pickup line.
Is that right?
There, determined by science.
Yes, but only in Britain.
Apparently.
It's not hot very often there, is it?
Could in you Britain? Say it one more time so I can write it?
The study was called Chat Up Lines as Male Sexual Displays. Ooh. And in it, researchers at the University of Edinburgh asked 40 female subjects to evaluate different pickup scenarios. Quote, the highest rated lines were those reflecting the man's ability to take control of a situation, his wealth, education, or culture, and spontaneous wit, or as you can see in that example, his athleticism.
Mm. You said it like, is everyone familiar with that line?
Well, that's part of its appeal, I guess.
What do you use all winter?
Coming up, Carl Castle crafts clever odes to the week's news in the world's only listener limerick challenge. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play, and matinee idol Tab Hunter joins us to play our Not My Job game. Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and the Alzheimer's Association, advancing research, providing care and support services, and promoting healthy brains at alz.org. Radio Shack, featuring Vex Robotics, working robot kits, where design is limited only by the imagination. Information at radioshack.com. And National Geographic Books, publisher of Visual History of the World, featuring 4,000 color illustrations for families and scholars alike, in stores now. We will be back in a minute with more of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR, National Public Radio.
For the veterans of World War I, the losses are still painful.
It makes them so angry that young men are still being pitched into battles that are seemingly incomprehensible as they were to those young men that went to war in those days, really.
Stories from the last survivors of the Great War, later today on All Things Considered from NPR News.
From NPR and Chicago Public Radio, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carol Castle. We're playing this week with Roy Blunt Jr., Paula Poundstone, and Sue Ellicott. And here again is your host at the Chase Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you, everybody. Right now it is time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Listener Limerick Challenge. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT if you would like to be challenged. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Karen Jones from Flagstaff, Arizona.
Hey, how are things in Flagstaff?
They're very nice, actually.
Really? I've never been to Flagstaff. I'm told it's quite nice.
It is. We're not in a desert.
No.
Never said you were.
Everyone thinks Arizona is all desert.
Yeah. If it's not desert, what is it?
It's a forest. We're surrounded with pine trees, and we get a lot of snow. We even have a ski resort here.
A ski resort?
Yeah.
Do you have the flag, too, or just the staff?
Occasionally there's a flag, I think.
Where did that name come from?
It's a staff for a flag.
Boy, you really broke it down.
Yeah.
Karen, welcome to our show.
Thank you.
Now, some of the news this week inspired our limericist, Philip Gotica, to basically break into verse. He's written three limericks about stories we found in the week's news. Carl is going to read them for you, but he will not finish them, of course. Your job is to do that two times out of three. And if you do so, you will win our prize, Carl's voice, and your home answering machine.
Okay.
All right?
Mm-hmm.
Here is your first limerick.
Okay.
Though on my new findings they shower doubt, I have ways to get cabbage's power out. Once the pickling is through, we will lick the bird flu. Yes, the illness succumbs to some.
Oh, geez. It rhymes with power out?
It rhymes with power out,
shower doubt.
Let's hear the limerick again, and you can listen for some internal clues as well.
Like the word cabbage.
For example.
Though on my new findings they shower doubt, I have ways to get cabbage's power out. Once the pickling is through, we will lick the bird flu. Yes, the illness succumbs to some.
Ah.
Oh, sauerkraut.
There you go.
I don't like that stuff.
Everybody's been worried about bird flu. What are we going to do? What are we going to do?
Right.
This is what you do. Eat pickled cabbage.
Oh.
Mm. Researchers in Seoul, South Korea, have discovered that chickens infected with bird flu have actually improved after ingesting the Korean version of sauerkraut pickled cabbage called kimchi. The science behind this is still uncertain. There might be some bacteria in the cabbage that has a good effect on the virus, or maybe just the virus doesn't like hanging around with chickens with bad breath. So there you go.
But didn't we just hear, like, about a month ago that sauerkraut was trying to reinvent itself and... Don't you remember that?
So in other words, it's like much the same way that the prune manufacturers became dried plum manufacturers.
Yes, precisely.
The sauerkraut manufacturers, instead of being a tasty cabbagey condiment, are going to be like a dessert food.
Yes. Sweet kraut.
Well,
avian flu beater.
Well, precisely. Now they've decided that they're medicinal.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. Aren't you a little suspect of those two stories coming practically on the heels of one another?
It's a conspiracy. You're right.
You know... You're not supposed to just believe everything you hear about sauerkraut. You know, you laugh, but wait until you get the flu and you have all that sauerkraut.
All right, here is your next limerick, Karen.
Okay.
If maize had been meant to be worn, to tamales my feet would adorn. I prefer crisp flat breads to some synthesized threads. So please do not make socks from my...
Corn?
Yes, corn. I don't know if you're aware of this, but in this country we have a corn glut. We grow too much corn. We need to think up new uses for the corn. So the U.S. Grains Council has backed a plan to use the corn to manufacture socks. These socks, they're made of corn-based Ingeo fiber. They're going to debut on... Japanese store shelves next year. Japanese, they'll wear anything. They're supposedly more earth-friendly than, you know, synthetic nylon socks. The Wait Wait marketing department has come up with a name for them, the corn-based socks. Mm. Fetos.
Mm. Ooh, not bad. Not bad.
All right, Karen, you have one more limerick to go. Here is your last limerick.
The researcher wipes his moist brow. It's been done, but I do not know how. These ruminant beasts will not budge in the least. How do drunken frat boys tip a...
cow?
Yes!
All right.
How do they tip a cow? It is the legendary pastime of bored small-town kids and state college frat boys, but has anyone ever actually tipped a cow? According to Canadian researchers, no, it isn't possible, or not very possible. The study showed that at least five people would be required to generate enough force to upend a bovine, and what's more, Bessie would most likely run off first because, unlike horses, cows do not sleep standing up. So we all thought that cow tipping was something that was done. We realized that we had never actually seen it ourselves. So we ask you guys, our listeners, if you yourself have actually tipped a cow, not a friend of a friend, not somebody you heard about, you, please write to waitwait@npr.org, include graphic detail of the incident, photos if possible, and, of course, the name of the cow.
I always just give, you know, straight 20%.
Carl, how did Karen do in our quiz?
Karen had the three correct answers, Peter, so Karen, you are a winner. You win our prize.
Very well done.
Thank you.
And now the game where we invite celebrated people to answer questions about uncelebrated things. Back in the 1950s and 60s, Tab Hunter was one of the biggest stars in the Hollywood sky. He starred in movies, he recorded number one hit songs, and he romanced the most beautiful starlets. Well, two out of three ain't bad. Mr. Hunter has written a new memoir, Tab Hunter Confidential, in which he talks about his movie life and his real life and the differences between them. We are delighted to have him here with us. Tab Hunter, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't
Thank you.
So you've come out of retirement. You haven't been made movies in a long time, but you've come out of retirement to write this book about yourself.
Well, actually, I heard someone else was going to be doing a book on me, and I thought, you know, I'm a very private person, but I just didn't want that. So I figured, look, get it from the horse's mouth, not from some horse's ass after I'm dead and gone.
There you go.
And it was just that simple, I swear. I mean, I figure I don't want someone putting a spin on my life. I'm not going to try to pull the wool over anyone's eyes. What you read is what you get, and that's it.
Well, the memoir, which we read, in fact, we discussed it in the show earlier. We got an advanced copy. It's very honest and very frank and very revealing about your career and the time it was. You were a classic sort of old Hollywood story in that you were discovered, I think, in a stable, is the story?
Shoveling the real stuff as opposed to the Hollywood stuff. And, absolutely,
and,
yes.
And they brought you into the system. They gave you a new name, Tab Hunter.
They said, we've got to tab you something. And my other agent said, well, he rides horses, hunters and jumpers, so it could have been Tab Jumper as opposed to Tab Hunter. Luckily, it was Tab Hunter. But, you know, I hated the name when I first got it. But pretty soon, I saw a page of the order of Tab Hunter, and I thought, I could get used to that rather quickly.
And your real name was, of course, Arthur.
My real name was Art. The only person who called me Arthur without getting hit was my mother.
Of course, so. And I won't do it again.
No, that's all right. That's all right. No, I promise.
So, and then, of course, you went into the whole Hollywood system, and you starred in films. I mean, one story I loved about you in your book was, of course, your first audition for your first film, which a role you got, the entire audition was simply taking off your shirt.
Well, I did. As I walked in, the writer, Stephanie Nordley, looked at me and said, that's the boy I want if he can read his new name off a piece of paper. You know, it was very difficult being a product of Hollywood because it's hard to, you know, where does one serve one's apprenticeship? I respected all these fabulous actors out of New York who had that wonderful background behind them. Anyway, I was thrown into a picture with Linda Darnell. That was the film. And I was very fortunate, but a nervous wreck because I was very shy. And Linda said, Tab, don't worry, I'm good luck for newcomers. And then I had to kiss her in the scene, and I thought, how can I kiss the Blessed Mother from the Song of Bernadette? It was wonderful.
Now, what's interesting and what has attracted a lot of attention to your memoir, and which you discuss this very frankly, is that during all this period, during your great success, and during a period in which you were linked romantically to Natalie Wood and Debbie Reynolds, you were and are, of course, a gay man.
Well, the word gay wasn't around in those days. I'm a very private person. I was very secretive and terribly frightened. And that whole way of living is very, very difficult, you know, because all I wanted to do was just prove myself as an actor.
But certainly you had to go to great lengths to keep your private life private
during your career. Absolutely. And I was frightened that whole time. But, you know, I was very fortunate to be at a studio, Warner Brothers, and it was the end of the studio system. Natalie and I were together at Warner Brothers. She had just finished Rebel Without a Cause with Jimmy Dean. I just finished Battle Cry and Track of the Cat with Bob Mitchum. And they threw us together. They wanted to make the next Myrna Loy and William Powell out of us, I guess. And we did everything they told us to. That was our job. We were kids. If they're paying you a check every week, you do what they ask. And if you can't do the job, you're out of there. They're going to get someone else, right?
Well, I was intensely curious about this because, of course, as I said, you know, this was the old studio system. And as you just described, they created they created a fake private life for you.
No, they didn't create a fake private life for me. The fans wanted more information on me, so they fed it to them. That was their job.
Of course, you started playing around with your clean-cut American boy image some years ago when you kissed Divine in John Waters' movie.
Well, so. That was wonderful. John said to me, "Say, how do you feel about kissing a 350-pound transvestite?" I said, "Well, I'm sure I've kissed a heck of a lot worse." But I've got to tell you, thanks to John Waters, who I call your friendly undertaker, he is wonderful. You know, it introduced me to a whole new public out there that never knew what the heck a tab hunter was.
That's true. John Waters, imagine the universe of tab hunter fans and John Waters fans did not have much overlap in their Venn diagram.
No, not at all. Oh, yeah.
Well, Tab Hunter, we have asked you here to play a game we're calling...
At the end of the 20th century, mankind perfected a method to buy herbal Viagra.
Where?
Vince Cerg and Bob Kahn, two of the inventors of the Internet, were awarded Presidential Medals of Freedom this week. So by way of honoring their achievement, we thought we'd ask you three questions about what the president likes to call the Internets. These three were taken from a listing of the web's top 100 moments on a website called AOL Watch. So you get two of these questions right, you'll win our prize for one of our listeners, Carl's voice on their home answering machine. So Carl, who is matinee idol Tab Hunter playing for?
Peter is playing for Chris Kelly of Arlington Heights, Illinois.
All right, you ready to go? You can do this. First question. One of the great uses of the Internet, of course, has been to create communities of people who would come together in pursuit of a single creative goal. One of the first great communal works of art on the Internet was which of these? A, a repository for alternative captions for family circus cartoons. B, an online photo collection documenting more than 10,000 oddly shaped birthmarks. Or C, the Gilead, a 40,000-word epic poem which summarizes, in order, every episode of Gilligan's Island.
Mm-hmm. I would think maybe B might
be. You think B, the online photo collection of 10,000 oddly shaped birthmarks.
I mean, there's so many birthmarks in the world.
You'd think. No, it was the Dysfunctional Family Circus, is what it's called.
Oh, might have known.
The Dysfunctional Family Circus eventually collected 500,000 alternate captions for the charming cartoons, like, "Jeffy, the restraining order says a minimum 100 feet from Mommy." Eventually, the website owner took the site down because the artist of the real Family Circus asked him to nicely. Oh. So you still have two more chances. I want you to know, by the way, that for all these fake things, we had to check them because anything's possible. But as far as I know, there is no online archive of birthmark photos.
Oh.
There will be.
Next Tuesday, I'm sure. All right, you have two more chances here. Next question. One of the best things about the Internet, of course, is the opportunity it provides to make money. Which of these is a real internet-based business? A, owntheair.com, a site which buys air rights above buildings and resells it in cubic foot chunks. So you can own, you know, that bit of air way up there, to the left. B, monkeyphonecall.com, which for a fee of $10 will call you or a friend up and make monkey sounds over the phone. Or C, buyafriend.com, which will regularly send you personalized email so people who happen to see your inbox will think you're popular.
Oh, no. Well, Just because it's so weird, I'd have to go with B.
Monkeyphonecall.com?
Why not?
Mm-hmm. You're right.
Yeah. Oh, no.
Monkeyphonecall.com. Monkey phone call is only a click away.
Oh, whoa.
And you can find out more about it. Exactly.
That's why he knew the answer. He started it.
You can undersell them.
I think I did that, Phil.
You can check it out at monkeyphonecall.com. All right, you're one for two. So if you get this last one right, Tab, you will win it all.
You're putting the pressure on me.
Yeah, I absolutely am. The best thing about the internet, of course, is the ease of access to important information. One programmer named Bob Vesterman created a service which gives you up-to-the-date bulletins in real time about what? A, the weather on the moon. B, whether or not beloved actor Abe Vigoda is still alive. Or C, the current location with longitude and latitude of Paris Hilton. Mm.
Only because it's so ridiculous. You've got to go with C.
You know, with Paris Hilton.
I think so, only because people are interested in the weirdest things.
That's true. Sadly, they're also interested in whether or not Abe Vigoda is still alive.
Ah!
I'm so sorry. I hate to do it to you.
I knew that.
Did you really? Do you have that feature on your computer, Paula?
No, but of all the things, I knew that that's what I would most want to know.
This happened apparently because at one point there was a rumor that went around that Mr. Vigoda had died, and he responded, no, I haven't. And so this programmer, wanting to make sure this never happened again, created, it's an extension for the Firefox browser, in case you want it. You can get it, it'll show a little window in your browser. You know, I guess yes, no. Or maybe it's a little, I don't know, it's a little icon of Abe Vigoda, and if he dies, his eyes turn into X's. I don't know how it works.
Gosh, and to think we have Al Gore to thank for all
of
that.
Isn't it amazing? And we want to say that as of showtime, we checked, Mr. Vigoda is still with us. So, Carl, how did Tab Hunter do in our quiz?
Terribly.
He needed two correct answers, Peter, to win for Chris Kelly, but he had just one correct answer.
Oh, Chris, I'm sorry.
Well, nonetheless, it's an honor to have you play for us.
Thank
him,
you
sure.
so much. I really appreciate it.
Oh, we appreciate it, too. Tab Hunter is a dreamy teen heartthrob. He's the star of movies ranging from Battle Cry to Damn Yankees to John Waters' Polyester. His new book, Tab Hunter Confidential, is out now. Tab Hunter, thank you so much for being with us. In just a minute, Carl learns something very interesting about the nation of Brazil. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to join us on the air. Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and the Alzheimer's Association, encouraging everyone to stay physically, mentally, and socially active for brain health. Tips at alz.org. The Charles Stewart Mott Foundation, online at mott.org, supporting efforts to promote a just, equitable, and sustainable society. And the William T. Grant Foundation, supporting research to improve the lives of young people, online at wtgrantfoundation.org. We'll be back in a minute with more of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR, National Public Radio.
The tomatoes were planted. They looked pretty good, until they were destroyed in the ice storm. At least that's what the farmer said.
They had one Mexican that ought to beat. He beat over 16,000 of them. But he'd just go through there and knock the leaves off of them. It made it look like where the hail had beat it up.
The insurance company thought it looked like a hailstorm, too, and paid up. I'm Steve Inskeep. Fraud Down on the Farm. Monday on Morning Edition from NPR News. We'll be right back.
This is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle. We're playing this week with Sue Ellicott, Paula Poundstone, and Roy Blunt Jr. And here again is your host at the Chase Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. In just 1 minute, we're going to see how Carl and another listener do with some more voices from the week's news. If you would like to play our games on air, give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That translates to 1-888-924-8924. Right now, panel, though, some more questions for you. Paula, this week we read about a scientific study that proves and explains why women really do not like what?
Why women really do not like scientific studies.
No.
You want to give me a hint?
This is going to be shocking because I happen to know that you are an exception to this. Mm. That you like this.
Oh, Three Stooges.
Three Stooges, exactly right.
You know, I want to know who does these studies. This makes my blood boil. This does not sound very scientific.
Well, this, in fact, was very scientific. They were trying to figure out, these scientists were, at the Stanford University School of Medicine, why and if men and women react to humor differently. So they actually wired up the brains of men and women, their test subjects, and they showed them different humorous cartoons, and they measured their responses. And this is what they find out. They find that women are more discriminating in what they find funny. They don't expect things to be funny. That's right. That's why we have a lot of women fans.
Well.
And therefore, they enjoy it more when something turns out to be funny. Men, of course, by contrast, are more easily pleased. They find everything funny, including three funny-looking men poking each other in the eye and whacking each other in the head with sledgehammers.
Okay, here's where this study is off. Men may laugh at everything the Stooges do. That may be true. I love the Three Stooges, but I don't laugh at everything they do. That would be stupid.
So you're discriminating Three Stooges.
Precisely.
So which things do you laugh at and which things don't?
Oh, man.
There's just so much.
When they were tailors. and Mo said, "You rippities," and handed Shemp the pants. And Pants said, and Shemp said, "Yeah, you mendies." Or when they were electricians and Shemp pulled out some wires and he found something he needed and he said, "Eureka," and Mo slapped him and said, "Shut up, you don't smell so good yourself." Tell you one thing, my kid's not going to Stanford. I've had it with them and their hoaxes.
Roy, a follow-up to one of our big stories from last week. We told you about the man who was suing Home Depot after he says he was glued to a toilet seat there, and employees ignored his plaintive cries for help. This week we saw an interesting allegation about the man in question. What?
I'm not saying it's true, but it has been alleged that he has claimed to have been glued to a toilet seat before.
That's right.
I've thought about this, and on the one hand, it seems to me that how fast is that glue set? Wouldn't you be able to sense that you're sitting on something that shouldn't be on the toilet seat and get up before? But on the other hand, it could be a fiendish plot. How could you could just ruin a person's life forever by gluing him to a toilet seat twice? Because when he complained the second time, people would say, "Oh, there he goes again."
Mr. Bob Doherty says he was glued to the toilet seat at Home Depot in 2003. He just filed a lawsuit last week, which is why it was in the news. Well, after the news of the lawsuit came out, a man came forward from his hometown in Colorado, said, "Oh, this guy Doherty made the same complaint about a building here in 2004. Now, challenging this accusation of this repeated bum adhesion, Mr. Doherty volunteered to take a polygraph test and reportedly passed the test with flying colors. Yeah. Then, when he tried to get up from the chair,
Who goes to the Home Depot to do that anyway?
Stuck on you. Got this feeling down deep in my soul that I just can't lose. Guess I'm on my way.
Coming up, it's lightning fill in the blank, but first it's time for Carl to recreate some more voices from the week's news. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. You can always send an email, whenever you like, to waitwait@npr.org. So hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, it's Chris from Bel Air, Texas.
Hey, where's Bel Air?
Bel Air is a small residential oasis within the city limits of Houston.
Really?
Yeah.
So you're surrounded by Houston.
We're surrounded on all sides by Houston, Texas.
And yet you're an independent entity.
We are, although we do share a school district with Houston, but we have our own mayor, our own city council.
Wow. Does Houston ever threaten to invade?
Not since I've been here.
Really?
Yeah. But, you know, they have a history of invading things here in Texas. So
yes.
You never know.
Do you have a wall and a moat?
We do have a bayou behind our house.
That'll keep
it away. Probably filled with boiling oil.
That's good. Try that.
Okay.
Welcome to our show, Chris.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Now, you're going
to
play Who's Carl this time once again. Carl Castle is going to read three quotes in the week's news. Your job, correctly identify or explain just two of them. Do that. Carl will record the greeting on your home answering machine.
Okay.
Ready to go?
I think so.
Here's your first quote.
Wow. Brazil is big.
That, according to an eyewitness report, is what someone said upon seeing a map of our neighbor to the south. So who got his eyes opened about geography this last week?
I have to say that was our president, George Bush.
It was.
Okay.
And let's give him credit. He was right.
He was. President Bush went to a Latin American summit, and all he got was Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez saying nasty things about him in Spanish. He wasn't able to get the free trade agreement he wanted either, so it wasn't a very successful trip. On the way back, he stopped off in Panama, a country which treated him much better, because they know what happens when you tick off a member of the Bush family. All right, very good. Here is your next quote.
Liberté, égalité, stupidité.
That's how Slate.com headlined a story explaining why the French government can't stop what?
The rioting going on.
Right, very good.
Suburbs.
After more than a week of rioting by alienated Muslim youth in France's cities, government officials reacted by calling the rioters scum and saying useful things like violence is not the solution, apparently hoping that the rioters would realize how pointless their actions were and in the classic French fashion, sink back into ennui. This just in, the cover story of this month's Travel and Leisure magazine, devoted to the glories of visiting Paris, had this line, "Suddenly, the city of light is smoldering again."
Ooh, yeah.
All right, very good. Here is your last quote.
Okay.
I am so powerful and influential that I take over army divisions. I run the New York Times newsroom single-handedly, and now I take the country to war. Wow, I've heard of pushy broads, but this brings the pushy broad to a new level.
That was a reporter talking to the Washington Post about her reputation as she exited the job that gained her that reputation. Who are we talking about?
I think that would have to be Judith Miller.
Yes, Ms. Miller in the New York Times. Parted ways this week. She, I guess in a matter of a little bit of vengeance, gave a long interview to the Washington Post in which much of her past, which is quite interesting, was dished up. And one of the things we found out was that before she was hired by the New York Times back when, she did reporting for National Public Radio. So we dug in the archives and found this from 1976.
The CIA and the administration have been saying that recent leaks of classified information have proven the overwhelming need for such a secrets act.
That was Judy Miller on NPR talking ironically about leaks from the CIA in 1976. Well, now that she's looking for work, we want to make a plea to our old colleague. It's fall now. Back at NPR News, where you once worked, the aspens will already be turning. Come back to work at NPR, Judy, and life. Carl, how did Chris do in our quiz?
Chris had 3 correct answers, Peter. Chris, I'll be doing the message on your home answering machine.
That sounds great, Carl. Thanks.
Very well done. Thank you, Chris. Now on to our final game, Lightning Fill-in-the-Blank. Each of our players will have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as he or she can. Each correct answer now worth 2 points. Carl, can you give us the scores?
Paula Poundstone has the lead, Peter. She has 3 points. Roy Blunt Jr. and Sue Ellicott are tied for second. Each has 2.
All right, we have flipped a coin. Sue's elected to go second. Roy, you're up first. Please fill in the blank. Democrats won the gubernatorial races in New Jersey and in blank.
Virginia.
Right. Volunteers helped clean up after a blank swept through Kentucky and Indiana last weekend.
Tornado.
Right. Al-Zarqawi's Al-Qaeda organization claimed responsibility for the bombing of 3 hotels in the capital of blank.
Jordan.
Right. A study by the Kaiser Family Foundation found that the number of blank scenes on TV has doubled in the past 6 years.
6.
Right. After President Bush threw a mock punch while awarding him the Medal of Freedom, blank made a gesture to show he thought the president was crazy.
Muhammad Ali.
Right. After a string of public relations disasters, blank replaced his sister as his publicist.
Tom Cruise.
Right. The legislative committee in Wyoming is considering a bill that would make blanking a crime.
In Wyoming, they're going to finally get around to what we might call animal husbandry with the sheep.
You're weirdly close.
Oh, well.
The answer is wooing shepherds.
Oh.
Wooing shepherds. The Wyoming Wool Growers Association is sick of people approaching their shepherds on patrol and luring them away to other jobs, often leaving the sheep to wander the fields unchaperoned.
Why do the sheep need watched?
Yeah, what are they getting
They don't ever do anything.
have you never seen the Wile E. Coyote cartoons? In which the wily coyote creeps up and tries to steal the sheep away from the
shepherd. I thought he was chasing the roadrunner.
Sometimes, yes. Oh. Sometimes sheep.
It's not the sheep, though, that go, meep, meep, meow.
No. So, Carl, how did Roy do in the quiz?
Roy had 6 correct answers for 12 more points. He now has 14 points, and Roy has the lead.
All right. Here we go, Sue, fill in the blank. This week, senators grilled executives from the blank industry about their record profits.
Oil.
Right. In a series of raids on Tuesday, 17 suspected terrorists were arrested in blank.
Australia.
Right. The mayor of St. Paul, Minnesota was ousted from office in part because during last fall's election, he endorsed blank.
George Bush.
Right. The New York Times reported this week that lobbyist Jack Abramoff charged $9 million to arrange a meeting between President Bush and blank.
Himself.
No. President Bongo of Gabon. Lawmakers said there wasn't enough evidence to charge blank with perjury for telling a congressional panel that he had never used steroids.
Scooter Libby.
Rafael Palmera. Because he promoted his move to satellite radio on the air, blank was suspended from his syndicated radio show for 1 day.
Howard Stern.
Right. A Florida woman almost got away with stealing her employer's prized parrot by blanking.
By baking it in a pie.
By sneaking it out in her bra.
That's really desperate.
What she did was she stuck the expensive green wing parrot away in her bra, secreted it away, snuck out,
how come there's enough space between her body and the bra to stuff a parrot?
It was a baby parrot.
That bra did not fit.
Maybe she already had a canary stuffed in the other one and she was just trying to look symmetrical. I don't know. Anyway, what she did was she wanted then to trade the parrot for a vintage car, but the owner of the car happened to recognize the parrot. Hey, I know that parrot. And
tweets.
She never would have been found out, but then the person she was talking to decided to snack on crackers. And the next thing, you know... Carl, how did Sue do in our quiz?
4 correct answers, 8 more points for 10 points altogether, but Roy still has the lead with 14.
And how many, then, would Paula need to win?
6 correct answers.
Can you do it, Paula? What do you think?
Oh, yeah.
Sure. All right. Here we go, Paula. This is for the game. Fill in the blank. After gunmen killed a second lawyer, the defense team for blank demanded more security.
Saddam Hussein.
Right. After helping complete their review of the Hurricane Katrina response, blank has been taken off FEMA's payroll.
The guy who was there before.
No.
Brown. Brown. Mike Brown?
Michael
Brown. I cheated because
yes.
You said Mike.
No, I didn't.
Oh.
After suffering his first ever legislative defeat, blank accused the British Parliament of not taking terrorism seriously.
Blair.
Right, Tony Blair. Although he held a press conference to apologize for his behavior, the Philadelphia Eagles stood by their decision to suspend blank for the rest of the season.
Was it Owen Terrell? Terrell Owens?
Yes, Terrell Owens. After a group of teenagers organized a girl coffee, retailer blank pulled two T-shirts off the market.
Nike.
No, Abercrombie & Fitch. One of the shirts had the slogan, "Who needs brains when you've got these?"
And there's two little birdies there.
Yeah. A woman in Shropshire, England, thought she had lost a valuable ornamental bell forever until she blanked.
Threw up.
No. No, no, until she shook her puppy and heard it ring. A week after Beverly Harris lost her prized bell, she heard her Labrador puppy's tummy ringing. Harris said, quote, "I held him by the hips and gave him a little shake and it rang. I told my husband Richard and he cried with laughter."
Men will laugh at anything.
It's, you got it. Carl, did Paula do well enough to win?
She needed 6 correct answers. Peter, she had just 3.
Oh.
So with 14 points, Roy Blunt Jr. is this week's champion.
I couldn't have done it without Shemp and Mo.
Well done, sir. In just a minute, we're going to ask our panelists, now that they've struck a blow against evolution in their curriculum, what will the Kansas Board of Education do next? But first, let me tell you all that Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and Chicago Public Radio in association with Urgent Haircut Productions. Doug Berman, executive producer. Philip Goedeke writes our limericks. Our intern is Christy Ruth. Our web guru is Paul Heltzel. Our technical director is Robert Newhouse. Other engineers include Lorna White, Jennifer Loeb, Les Dolarchik, and Muhammad Mao. Our team at Chicago Public Radio is Kedar Coleman and Colleen Youngbluth. Thanks to Margaret O'Hara and John Zajac at Chase Bank. BJ Liedemann composed our theme. Our program is directed by Amanda Gibson, produced by Mike Danforth and Emily Ecton. The senior producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is Rod Abid. Now, panel, what will those wacky Kansas Education Board members do next? Paula Poundstone.
The students will no longer study science. They'll be put into a burlap bag and thrown into a pool. And if God thinks they deserve an A, they'll float.
Sue Ellicott.
The state is going to issue an edict that is, in fact, the union's most mountainous state, with 8 previously hidden ranges.
And Roy Blunt Jr.
They will require the teaching of an alternative ending to The Wizard of Oz, in which...
Well, if the Kansas Board of Education does any of those things, panel, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you, Carl Castle. Thanks also to Sue Ellicott, Paula Poundstone, and Roy Blunt Jr. Thanks to all of you for listening. I am Peter Sagal. We will see you next week. This is NPR, National Public Radio.